The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 191.
PenguinCon.
PenguinCon 2016.
I just thought of that.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's the name of the show every year we're here.
Okay.
Anyway, this is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
You know, you're right. You're right, Tony. It is the name of the show every time we're here. Yeah. I tried to make it sound new and exciting. I mean, the actual convention is always kind of fun, but we thought we were going to be in a suite, in a nice little suite broadcasting, but there's a little bit of a change, so now we're in one of the convention session rooms.
That's right. And it's actually not a bad room. You know, everybody can sit around. It's more, I think, informal and personal, sitting around like this,
other than,
you know, last year we were in a big room and there was, you know, everybody was off in the back, and if you were going to talk, the mics mm-hmm. couldn't pick you up and blah, blah, blah.
And now we're joined by nine of our closest friends.
Yes. I like it. There's a table.
Everyone's sitting here. That's right.
It feels like a round table discussion now.
It does. But anyway, so we're here, and normally what we do at this point is kind of catch up on what's gone on.
Yeah.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, go ahead, Mary.
I'm actually kind of excited about this. Well, actually excited, and there's sort of a little funny story with it. Last time we recorded, I was saying that, yes, I was going to order my Linux desktop, that it was going to be the year of a Linux desktop in my house,
right.
Despite it never happening anywhere else, apparently. So I went to Zarezan, I ordered my Linux desktop, I ordered the Limbo. Now, I'm not sure why, at the time, I didn't know why they called it the Limbo, because I just thought that's kind of an odd name for a desktop. But it has 4 gigs of RAM, I ordered, I have 2 hard drives in it, and I told them to put Kubuntu on it, and then put my home on a separate partition, etc. So I had that all in the instructions, and last week my system arrived. So I was kind of excited. I took it out of the box. It really looks cool. You know, again, it only has 8 gigs of RAM, but that's enough for me.
Yeah.
Because the one I use now only has 4, and it's just kind of wheezing along.
It's always exciting when something new comes in. You can pull it out of the box and plug it in and play with it.
Wait. Did you say plug it in?
Yeah.
No, because the folks at Zarezan forgot to include the power cord.
Oops. Oh. That's not good.
So it suddenly occurred to me why it was called the Limbo, because that's where the customer sits while they wait for the power cord to arrive.
It was living up to its name.
Yeah. So it did. So I was completely annoyed, and I just kind of had to settle down and count to about 100. And I called them and I said, "Say, I don't think I've got a power cord for this." And they said, "Well, that could have happened." And I'm thinking to myself, "Well, why did it happen? Where's your checklist?" I didn't say that to him, but I am going to send an email to the president of the company, a very nice email, because, you know, aside from the fact that somebody dropped the ball with the power cord, I've always been satisfied with Zarezan equipment. I mean, I've got a laptop here that uses it. This is my Zarezan laptop, and I'm contemplating ordering another laptop from them. But, you know, again, they dropped the ball on that. So that was one of my exciting items. And then I started the file transfer process, you know, because I only have 40 gigs of free space left on my Dell Inspiron desktop. So I've got to start moving that stuff over, and I started that process, and it's finally finished.
All right.
Aside from preparing for PenguinCon, that's what I've been up to.
Yes. Cool. Fun stuff.
All right.
So what's going on with you, Tom?
Oh, not a whole lot. Been, you know, obviously excited about PenguinCon, been going around doing my talk. I did my BSD talk. I did my Mensa talk on open source, which was interesting. Usually people don't start throwing questions about elliptic curve encryption at you, but they did.
Ooh.
And they like math a lot at Mensa, which was fun. It was, mm-hmm. the talk went really well. It was interesting. They've actually invited me to come speak at a couple other events. They're going to get with mm-hmm. me on that. So I thought that's kind of cool. I guess they have like this open thing they do, and they're always looking for speakers. And we are joined by a few more guests, I think.
Yep.
There's more chairs.
There's some chairs over here. Even though there's stuff by them, you guys can sit down.
Yeah, you can just pull them out and just have a seat. And just know
just
that
you
might be in the line of camera fire there, which mm-hmm. is right up there. But that's for the hangout
the cord
stream.
There. And, oh, hold on. Wait.
There we go.
On.
And while Tony deals with the logistics, Tom, I wanted to thank you again for coming out to the Southeast Michigan BSD User Group meeting.
Yes.
And speaking of pfSense. It was very interesting.
The pfSense is so in-depth. And, of course, the disappointing thing happens. I do my pfSense talk. I put all the slides together many hours ago in the production of that because there's a video that goes with it. And then they updated the interface significantly. I knew it was coming, but I didn't realize how much better it would be. And pfSense did need a facelift. Feature-wise, my talk is fairly accurate, with the exception of someone pointed out that in the default setup for OpenVPN, they do default to part of it being SHA-1. And it's just a simple pull-down to SHA-2, but that's still in the new version as well. The wizard defaults to a SHA-1 key, so.
And the significance of that for anyone who might not be up to speed with that is what?
It is potentially insecure.
I'm not saying I'm that person.
Yeah. No, it's potentially insecure. There is theoretically that you could correct that. Well, not theoretically. It can be done. Mm-hmm. You just have to be determined.
Okay.
Or have the NSA's resources. And
yeah.
But other than that, I'm just getting ready to put together some. I'm going to take the open source talk that I did with Mensa, and I'm putting that into a presentation. That'll be a YouTube video as well and part of my blog post. Mm-hmm. So me, a lot of interest in it. So there's that. And I'm also, the presentations I've done here are the business class networking on a home budget. That went really well, and that's going to be turned into a YouTube video. I talk a lot about the Unify devices that we use, which you can really build a nice network at your house for not a lot of money to handle it. Because, you know, these consumer devices that they throw everything in just don't do everything great. And, I mean, great, they are $29.95 at Best Buy to buy some cheap router. But if you're like me and there's a lot of devices, and it's because I have kids, and they have tablets, and they have laptops, mm-hmm. and they have a Chromecast. So mm-hmm. next thing you know, they add up, okay, there's 28 devices in my house that are all Wi-Fi connected. That just isn't what these $29.95 routers are meant for. But for a few hundred dollars, you can put together the same stuff that some of these enterprise companies are putting together for roaming access. So, yeah, I'm going to be putting that talk in as a blog post as well. So the products are very affordable.
And so that is something that somebody could repurpose an old computer and turn.
Yep.
And I wonder who's going to have an old computer sitting around.
Exactly. You can find these all over the place for a little or nothing. A lot of people realize routing does not take massive horsepower to do. You know, it does. Even pfSense, the boxes they sell run on Atom processors, which mm-hmm. are the low wattage, not too powerful multi-core processors that Intel makes. I mean, these are like little 8 and 12 watt devices. They don't take a lot of horsepower to do routing. So you can take a really old computer and still have no problem with your 100 megabits mm-hmm. of internet if you're so lucky to have it.
Wow. You know, speaking of low wattage, I was going to mention something, too. I had done I'd done some YouTube surfing looking for information on converting. I've got a battery-powered, some little lights and things that are run off three AA batteries. And I'm tired, and I like these lights, but I wanted to make them USB, so I can plug them into a USB port. And it is really great. There are several videos out there that will show you how to rewire the battery-powered lights or, you know, whatever that, you know, whatever you've got, and turn it into a USB-powered device. And not only that, Tony was mentioning, because I was going to check on this too, is that you can then take one of those little adapters, the phone chargers, and just plug this thing into it, and you plug it right into your wall. So
yes.
Free from batteries. So that's...
Yeah, you know, what's nice about the wall plugins is that they even actually give, mm-hmm. you typically give better power than what the laptop can.
Yeah. Well, that'll be good.
Yeah.
So anyway. And Tony?
Very cool.
Or Tom, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Oh, no, that was.
That was it?
Yeah, that was it.
All right. Well, this week, before coming to PenguinCon, I was setting up a new switch at work, network switch. And as I was booting it, it said, loading the Linux kernel. And this is a Cisco switch.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, it's the iOS NX version. It actually is running the Linux kernel. So I thought that was pretty cool. I had heard about them looking into doing that a few years ago. And I think the idea behind it is it can then become modular, where vendors can create plugins and add functionality to routers and switches. So it sounded pretty cool.
It's pretty neat. And a couple shows ago, we talked about Facebook building on, they call them their tour box, which is the top of router, top of rack. They're really, really high speed. Basically, Facebook kind of went to Cisco and them and said, we need to be able to do incredible amounts of switching in real time and filtering. And Cisco said, yeah, we can't do that. So they spec'd out the same hardware that Cisco runs on because it's capable of those speeds and built an open source Linux kernel cut down. So I'm willing to bet that Cisco, since already someone did the legwork on it, has these special compiled kernels on there and realizing we better embrace it or someone's just going to do it without us.
Exactly. Yeah, so that was pretty exciting.
That's pretty cool.
And then PenguinCon this year, I had, there were some pretty good talks.
What was your favorite?
My favorite.
Besides your own.
Well, it was my own. Yeah. Internet security for lay geeks. That actually wasn't too bad.
Yeah. Tony did a good job talking about security.
Thanks. Yeah.
I wasn't sure what a lay geek was.
It's.
Because a lay person, you know, if you're, does that mean if you're kind of a self-educated geek?
No. I always thought like a layman is somebody that. Doesn't have, like, all the technical knowledge about how to run a computer.
Did you see all the people that were in
here? It was a big mix. It was people that were professional, you know, IT people for large corporations.
Mm-hmm.
There's somebody from University of Michigan.
Yep.
They had done a large dual security rollout.
There was in a LastPass. Cryptographer was there.
Yeah.
He was kind of interesting. And then there were folks.
Was there.
Tom was there.
I don't know if I'm interesting, but I was there.
I was just another pretty, well, maybe not so pretty face, but. But then there were new people there, people that you could tell by the questions they asked. But what I think was really nice about the talk is that the contributions from the audience, I think, really helped to further enrich your already well thought out presentation. So I thought it, really went well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know there's a few people in here that were there too. And you all gave some pretty good input. And I really appreciate that because it was a couple good things that. It gave credence to me or, you know, that I'm actually know what I'm talking about. And then, you know, added on that other people are doing similar things. And, so it was cool. Yeah, I appreciate it.
And if we can get even one more person using dual factor authentication, we've done something. I feel accomplished. If I can get one more person a day converted.
Yeah.
Oh,
two factor,
you know,
so much better.
You know, I realize I put the dual on my, phone. What we use for our site, and it's not connected to the site, so I was trying to change get my password.
Oh.
I ended up not getting in there because it's not set up.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And what we're talking about is we have, even for a lot of our own devices and for our website, that's on our website, we use, Duo Security, which is a two-factor authentication system. They're based out of Ann Arbor, awesome company, and.
And I didn't know that. I didn't know they were based out of Ann Arbor.
One of my friends works there, or used to.
Oh, okay.
And, they're a great place.
You know what's really cool? I'm on their meetup group, and they do a lot of security talks.
Yeah.
I want to say every 2 weeks they do one.
Yep.
And, a lot of interesting
stuff.
It's very active. I haven't been able to get out there for one of them. But being local, it's really nice. Yeah. Anyway, so I said the other exciting ones I've been to is, networking for sysadmins. That was a pretty good one from, Michael Lucas.
Oh, I thought that was very interesting because
even
though I'm not really a sysadmin per se, I thought the information he provided was, very informative for me. Just as far as understanding the network layer, you know, the stack.
The idea is to give the administrator, a server administrator, kind of the idea of basic networking knowledge, so that they are able to work nicely with the networking team,
The people who work with the physical layer versus the software layers of it, they don't always agree, and they love to blame each other, and then user goes, which one of you can I choke, please?
Right.
Yeah, so that was good.
Yeah. And then there was a Raspberry Pi talk. Basically, they scrolled through a ton of really neat projects that people have done, and they've talked about their it was the writers of what is it? Hacking the Raspberry Pi or something? I can't remember.
I got to submit my Pi Shredder project to them because I've had some interest in it, and I did a little video review on it. We have a challenge. We have to, anytime computers come in, you have a retail store and computers come in, and we want to make sure we do the full 3DOD wipe. But that becomes tedious and it takes a long time. So we came up with a simpler way. We took a Raspberry Pi, we put it on a shelf, and we plugged in some USB hard drive docks, numerous ones. And automatically, when you plug a hard drive in, it just shreds any hard drive that you put in there. Now, we came up with a script before we ran it on a Raspberry Pi, and it became the dangerous because you had to make sure you didn't shred the wrong hard drive, and you'd be running it on one of the local workstations. We're like, okay, this could end badly. So we decided if we dedicated a Raspberry Pi, and as soon as it starts up, it runs the shredding tool, and you plug it in, and the light blinks until it's done shredding, and you just eject it when you're done, and you have a 100% blank hard drive. And we have a pile of not done and done in a box. It's really, really simple process. All the not done ones are here, all the done ones are here, and then they go on a shelf. Because unfortunately, the one hang-up we have is it won't do smart checking because they're plugged in USB, and only the latest Raspberry Pis have a rudimentary SATA interface, but I haven't figured out whether or not we can pull smart status over them. Because we actually, before we put the drives back on the shelf, although it's not the most accurate for health of hard drive, we do check the smart status on them. Smart status sometimes starts out as good, and after you shred them, after you've walked an entire drive, then it goes bad. So it's kind of a nice test, because the drive's now been, had the head walk three times all the way across the drive, writing and reading random numbers. So
right.
We check it for that, and we put it back in the pool of drives to use for used.
Yeah. Yeah.
It works good.
It's a really cool project.
Which we drew a logo for it.
Did you?
We get Shredder from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He stands above it, and he's holding a hard drive, and it says, shred it.
You should submit that, Tom.
Yeah, it's a fun project. It's it's all on GitHub, too, so it's all everything's open
source. That's a great method for, you know, repurposing drives, provided they survive that method, or that.
Before I submit it, should I take the profanity at it? It actually comes out, this will F your drive. Are you sure you want to run it, like, when you kick it off?
I know, I bet there's a lot of maintainers out there.
Put a couple asterisks in there.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So.
Well, it's just like once in a while when we review the Linux kernel, we look at the Linux kernel swear count, and we see how that's trending occasionally, which is kind of amusing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we need to keep moving.
Let's move on.
I think so.
All right. So.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
All right, so some stuff we got from the last few weeks. An email. We got an email from Alan Weldon. Alan. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it was. But I know, Tom, you replied to him asking questions about the UniFi router.
Oh, yeah.
So you're able to throw some links over his way. So thanks for checking in with us. And like I said, Bill emailed me about, said he's a enterprise developer for doing work with like MariaDB and Oracle SQL Server stuff. He's done a lot of Node.js. So I'm going to be getting a hold of him. The email came in yesterday, right in the middle of PangoCon, so I didn't get a chance to reply yet, but I will be soon. So thank you. Did you guys see anything else?
I think, Tom, I think you had, there was a question about one of the wireless.
That was the UniFi.
Oh, that was that one? Okay,
yep.
I'm sorry.
Cool.
That.
Yeah. Right. And I'm actually going to also reply once I have my, because I put together how from out of the box, how to set those up, how to configure them. So I'll be posting that as a full review on YouTube. Because they just added some new features that made it easy for home users. There's now an app on your phone to configure them with a QR code. So you don't have to go through the more complicated setup of software and setting it up. You can literally scan it with your phone, set what your SSID and password is, and save, and done. Now you have a home router that you set up in like 5 minutes. It's actually easier to set up and secure than most of the other ones because it defaults to security. It goes from not set up to secure setup. You actually have to choose open if you want versus some of the out-of-the-box routers are insecure. As soon as you plug them in, people can jump right on your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, very cool.
Excellent. All right.
All right.
We're going to move on.
Yeah, moving on.
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
All right, so I was thinking we'd probably keep this a little short since we have other things we need to move on to. But the few things that I saw for the last couple weeks came out is Gparted came out yesterday. So that's always a really good program.
Well, you know, the one that really caught my eye was, I think, Quirky. There was a release of Quirky Linux, which, of course, is from the Puppy family. And what is interesting about that release is that it allows you to install from the Ubuntu repository. So yeah. Even though it's not an Ubuntu spinoff, you now are able to install from the Ubuntu repository. So that's kind of nice. So anybody who wants some of the Ubuntu goodies, but maybe don't want to deal with systemd, can certainly
right. Yeah, use and that. There was a plethora of Ubuntu this week.
Oh yes,
The Ubuntus have been released. And actually, there was the Ubuntu release party was Friday night.
Yes, yep. That's where I got my power cord from Phil Craig.
Yeah, I have that sticker on my Penguin Cam badge, the official Ubuntu release party.
Yep, I do too. That's right. Amongst the
I got to talk with a gentleman from Canonical for a while.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And
how was that?
Good.
Pretty good?
Yes.
So I didn't know Mark was here. Mark,
no, Schultz. Not him.
I'm kidding.
The guy from Canonical.
I'm kidding. All right.
Kind of related is, what is it called? Duvian? I love the title, that they have. It's fully released now, but, over on the register, it says, the Greybeards have forked Debian and have a systemd free version. That's the title. And it's a whole write-up. They got it all released and everything now. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So if you hate systemd enough, you can move over to a, newer updated release of Debian without systemd.
Or you can run that Ubuntu with the BSD kernel.
You can do that too.
So, which I am going to be trying out at some point soon. So, I'll probably have a little bit of a report on that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So, yeah, Quirky's caught my eye. And, of course, because FreeBSD recently released 10.3, GhostBSD has got a pre-production release. So, even though it's not production release, I'm looking at that. And provided I get past my little problems,
Maybe they'll fix LibreOffice for you.
yeah. I don't know what happened, but I won't go into detail.
It's not launching for you right now.
I've got some. I don't know if it was my last update or not. But
yesterday was. GhostBSD mm-hmm. Alpha 1. So you ready for an alpha?
Right. No, I'm not ready for an alpha.
Okay.
it'll have to be a release candidate or three before I put that on. If it's not production.
You're not feeling that experimental.
Yeah, no, not that at all. So, but anyway, yeah. So Quirky was the one for me off the list that really had me kind of. I think I'm going to take a look at it, perhaps on one of our upcoming episodes when I'll do a distro review. I'll take a look at Quirky.
All right.
I like the name, too.
Yeah.
Quirky.
Cool.
So, anyway, anything else on the
distros? I upgraded to the latest Kubuntu, the 16. That went boringly smooth.
That's
my
good
laptop,
to hear.
Yeah, my laptop updated. I would say it's a little bit more stable. I haven't mm-hmm. had some of the quirky crashes I was running into seem to have just kind of went away. Mm-hmm. Nice, stable, works well. A little bit of a facelift. They make KDE prettier. I still like it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I may or may not try it on my desktop. I'm still going back and forth on that. So.
Well, if you've got enough RAM, I mean, KDE's.
I need a better
some people
video
say
card.
It's bloated. I just say it's full featured.
Yes. Yes.
But, the other thing, too, and we've talked about this a few times, KDE Connect.
Yes.
I mean, I had my phone downstairs, and when I was working on my desktop prior to arriving here today, I had wanted to transfer my files to my phone because I had a feeling I might have wireless problems. And so I'm up there, and I right-click on it and said transfer to my phone via KDE Connect. I clicked it, and I heard the message downstairs. Did the little message sound, and it was on there, so.
Yeah, it's been really good. I mean, since I loaded my laptop, mm-hmm. the only thing I noticed when I upgraded it, and I know it's somewhat of a deprecated project, but they removed it from the Kubuntu edition, is I can't load XChat anymore, my favorite IRC client. It's my favorite one, not because of any other reason other than it's configured right, and it's just have been with me for years. They removed it.
Oh, did they?
You have to add a PPA to put it back in. They said you should be using HexChat because there's no more development for XChat. It's been forked over to HexChat because the developers kind of fell off like mm-hmm. almost 6 years. I didn't realize it hadn't been updated in 6 years.
You know,
ain't broke, don't fix it. It's IRC.
Well, yeah. Well, one thing, one that I use that I kind of like is Quassel. I don't know.
I haven't tried it.
I became aware of it when I was running PCBSD because that's one that the, those guys use. And I gave it a try, and I kind of liked it. It's relatively straightforward, got the job done.
Yeah. I'm probably going to go with HexChat because it looks just like XChat. So
okay.
Yeah. My familiar environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mint moved over to HexChat in the 17 release, or 17.1 or something like that.
So what, do you have chat in hexadecimal, or what's the deal with the
yes,
header?
Yes, I do.
It actually looks identical to it.
Make my life challenging.
Although, if you copy your config files over, so you don't have to reset everything up, those are all different. So you have to rename them, and there's some tweaks you have to do. So,
I haven't done that yet. It's on my to-do list.
Right.
Hmm. I'm lazy. I put a PPA in and just load it.
All right.
I want, you know, if it works.
Yeah. All right. So, I think we're going on to
Tech News and Views.
All right. So, Tom.
2 million certs for Let's Encrypt.
Many.
two million, yeah.
Yeah. Let's Encrypt has hit 2 million. Let's Encrypt, if you're not familiar, is the free SSL project to get everything encrypted. I used it. I started using it, I think, as soon as it was kind of sort of out of beta and it was accepted in all the browsers, for things we didn't need to have encryption but wanted to, we loaded on some of our servers and went really well. The update thing they have for this, pretty cool. I've never renewed an SSL certificate that easily. It does it automatically. Their SSL certs don't expire yearly. They expire every 90 days by default. And I don't think there's an option to change that, but because they have a really easy script to renew them, there's not a big deal. You can renew it before the 90 days. You can reorder it every 30 days just because you can.
Yeah.
And it just comes out in a cron job.
Yeah, I set it up in the cron job, so I really don't have to do anything. It just automatically does it in the background, and we're good to go.
The only thing we had to modify on the script is we had to rewrite it. I use a proxy for it, but you can use it as an SSL proxy, so you can have other servers, because it doesn't have support, for example, for IIS. I'm not using IIS, but I have another unusual web server for our remote support software that we proxy through Apache, and it works fine for that too, doing the SSL certificates, but the config file doesn't recognize the proxy, so you have to pause, swap the config, restart it, load the patch, and put it back in. But it works, and it works really, really well. The downside is it wants root access to do this. Upside is you can find a script that doesn't need root access. That way you can run it on more servers than just servers you have root on. So if you're using on a hosted system, there is a script floating around out there. It's on GitHub that will update it if you don't have root access.
Cool.
So like for shared hosting. DistroWatch added a list of hardware vendors on there that they're keeping up to date for all the places you can get Linux-friendly hardware. And the company that forgets power supplies is on there, too. There's a reason. Sorry, not picking on them.
Are there any new ones that you noted, Tom, at all? Or just, you know, I mean, it was like System 76.
System 76, and those are terrible. I have not heard of ChimpBox or SlimBook and Ministry of Freedom.
Ministry of Freedom.
Cool names.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but the other ones like IX systems are on which make the different NAS devices. Purism, Los Alamos computers. But there's
Emperor
a list
Linux,
on there that's nice.
Emperor Linux, is that on there? I think they used to
make Emperor Linux is on there. Yep. So this is a good place if you're looking for something out of the box that works. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a common question.
Yeah.
Especially because of my next article. Apparently the power support is dreadful, as they said. Yeah, someone's dropping something on our head.
Okay.
Anyways, the new chips, the Skylake chips from Intel, Linux does not fully support the power management on them, so they're not really sure. They're working on it. Linus has posted about it, but they're still
Does that mean your
some...
fan will run at all times?
Yes. Okay. Basically, they work at full power, but they don't want to work at the low power. They have some interesting switching options that basically turn off the processor in some very enhanced ways. It's been around for a little while. They've enhanced it even more in the Skylake. They're supposed to be super energy efficient and power on demand. Well, they haven't got that documented well enough, or the Linux kernel guys haven't developed it. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that argument lies, but it's not working is the bottom line. So be careful if you're running and buying the latest, greatest, newest hardware, which I never do. You know, this laptop's a few years old. It's a quad-core i7. You can pick this up for a few hundred dollars. It's incredibly fast. Why? It's not substantially faster to go to the Skylake i7.
But it originally came with what, Windows on it? Windows 7 or something?
I'm sure there's a Windows sticker that's been peeled off of this the day I got it.
Well, there's one you could peel off right now.
Oh, that's right. I did leave that one on there. I should peel that one off, too.
I'm just kidding.
It's just covered up. Hey. The important ones where people can see it, there's a Linux sticker on it.
Yeah.
All right.
Firefox got GTK support. And apparently, if you have some GTK themes, it makes it look like 1995 again. I've been seeing a lot of complaints about it, but you have full GTK in there, of course, only on the Linux version of Firefox. But if you have some themes, because there's apparently some compatibility issue, but it's their first release, and it's release 46 of Firefox that has that.
I thought Firefox always had GTK, because every time I opened it, it looked like it was a GTK app.
Not fully. They fully integrated on there. So I guess that anytime you load on Linux, it's got full GTK support. Apparently, that's new, at least according to their blog post for version 46.
Okay.
But then when I went down to people talking about it, everyone's like, it looks like 1995, and they're trying to figure out how to recompile it without GTK support.
It's retro.
It just works. Yeah, it looks very retro. Okay. Some people had some screenshots, and I'm like, yeah, that's really bad. It's not following the theme properly, unless they use like a completely default theme. But who wants to do that?
No.
Linux is about customizing it. So
that's right.
And May 3rd is, according to Defective by Design, the day against DRM. That is May 3rd. We should celebrate, in EFF. Burn all the DRM.
I have to watch it one last time before I do that.
No. Yes. That's May 3rd, so just a couple days from now. Or if you're listening to this, it's already happened.
Tuesday.
And hopefully something major
occurred. No, not this one. This one will be today.
They say May 1st.
Today's
May 1st.
So people listening live, it's 2 days from now. People downloading this, I hope it was an awesome day. And that's what I have for the news.
It's not
going
to take me 3 days. Well,
it might. It may take Tony 3 days.
Well, we'll try not to let that happen.
Right. His arm's better now. So
my arm's better. Actually, I finished
up
classes this week.
Are you able to lift a beer? I think the true test is if you're able to lift a beer.
You know, I think I can. I didn't. Right. I'm so used to doing everything with my right hand. I haven't really tried it. Although I've been lifting my coffee with my left.
That's good.
So yeah, now it's good. Everybody in the room. I don't know if you've been watching or listening, but I had my bicep tendon tore.
He got
upgraded. I had surgery to get it repaired. So I'm technically I have 3 more weeks of no lifting with my left arm.
I had to schlep all his stuff.
So yeah.
So, but that's okay. I didn't mind doing it, Tony, just carrying the, you know, the camera stuff and all that, just because I know you had to get better. So.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right.
Cool.
All right. So, interesting news, Tom. Anything else?
That's all I got for today.
All right. Did you see that Richard Stallman posted something on his blog last Monday about ZFS and Linux and how you can't run you shouldn't run ZFS on Linux. According to the GPL and, it's all in the license, he says.
It's all in the license. I did it, during the ZFS talk here at PenguinCon by Michael Lucas, that was addressed by a guy from Canonical.
Yes,
you can.
Okay. And that's good because, you know, that was at 10 o'clock at night and I have to say I was so tired I was home. Sleeping.
Yes, you can, and the future is ZFS in Ubuntu. They are all in on it. Licenses are sorted out to their satisfaction. Let lawyers figure it out. There's not. They think everything's copacetic, and they have no problems doing it right from the top on down. That was actually what a lot of discussion was. They are running the preferred system. They don't expect it within any short term to be a boot option to boot off of a ZFS system. So you're still going to probably have Extent 4 for your boot, but all the data you care about and the way the server setups are going to be is not LVM, but ZFS. So you can basically boot it up, set up Extent 4, all your server, your databases, everything are going to be on a ZFS file system. That is the way Ubuntu's doing it. That's the way they're going to prefer it on the servers. That's like the roadmap where it's all going.
But it seems like, it almost seems like taking a sledgehammer to pound in a 3-inch brad in a way. If you're thinking about Ubuntu desktops.
Yeah, it's not likely a desktop. It's more of a server scenario.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's way overkill for a desktop. Especially if you're wanting one hard drive and you're not doing backups to somewhere else for like full system
backups. Yeah, because that's what I've got. I mean, that's what I had.
ZFS right. has such superior support for snapshotting, backups, redundancy, and it's basically an always clean file system that, you know, no matter how you unmount it, for the most part, it's very, very stable. So it's popular for putting databases on. It allows them to easily create snapshots or duplicate data, or as they're using it, as he was explaining, how they use it across data centers for duplication.
Yeah, well, so, I think it'll be, you know, as that moves closer to fruition, it's going to be interesting to see how the discussion will shift and evolve.
There's just no other file system, he said. He went over the list, I can't remember the whole list of file systems, but they're all, like, on the list. He says the only one being, like, really actively pursued is ZFS internally. He says, yeah, okay, there's this one and that one. He goes, but everything, it's they're pretty much going all in on ZFS as the future.
Yeah. And actually, one thing, too, in the DistroWatch distros for GhostBSD, that next release, that 10.3 release that they'll be coming out with, you'll have an option of using UFS, which is a Unix file system, or ZFS.
Yeah.
So even, you know, even there, you know, moving over there.
Yeah,
so.
There's not, like you said, there's not a good desktop case used for it, but for, you know, if you're running server and you're running databases, you have a series of websites hosted on there, and you need to, you know, make snapshots of it, this is an easy way to do it.
Yeah, I think the hardest part for me, because I ran it on this laptop when I was running PCBSD, and I think the hardest part for me was not seeing partitions, simply because I'm used to having a separate partition where I could, you know, just a number of
different
things.
Think that's more of a, maybe you said this, but that's more of a BSD thing, not a ZFS thing. If I remember.
Well, the way ZFS handles the groups is a lot different.
It's going to be, I think it's going to, for some folks, it's going to be kind of an adjustment, especially if you're used to appreciating the separateness of partitions and being able to get to them separately and, or, you know, individually. So, but I think ZFS brings a lot to the table as far as snapshots, copy on write, and a number of other features that, you know, it's just that you don't really have now with some of the file systems that you use. So, okay.
Cool.
So that was a news item I had. I just kind of caught my eye, especially because ZFS and all that.
You know, Richard Stallman was in town too, right?
No, I did not know
He's
that.
He's speaking at Oakland University, I believe yesterday.
No,
wow.
Wednesday.
This Wednesday?
Yeah.
Okay, this coming Wednesday.
Yep. Yeah, it'll be, Oakland University, Wednesday night, I think 7 o'clock or 6 or something, I don't know. And the problem is that I wanted to go, but it's hard for me to justify it with my wife because I have PenguinCon this weekend and then Wednesday night would be that. Thursday night's the podcast meetup. And then we're going to be out at some family stuff on Friday. So.
Well, you could just say, hey, I'm going to be there for family stuff on Friday, but I have to do this thing.
Right.
That won't work?
No, okay. Not this time.
Just trying to be helpful. All right. So,
cool.
All right. Well, that's really all I had.
Yep. I found a few articles. One, actually, it's not the same article you posted, Mary, but, there's
about the same topic.
Yeah. The same topic where the Lansing, power, or utilities, company, it's the state of.
Did you read the title of that article?
It says BWL in limbo from
limbo.
Cyber attack. Right. And that's the utilities, it's actually
limbo.
Run by the city of Lansing, which is our state capital in Michigan.
Oops.
You're right. And, they had a cyber attack where it took down their accounting system. And they say that, everybody sells power and water, and the worst thing that's happening is they can't go and shut people's power off.
Horrible.
they don't know who owes what, and, so that's in limbo part right now.
Well, I think if that's not an eye opener for state and federal government, I don't know what will be. I mean, well, in addition to that, to the hospital kinds of, those are slightly different, but it's the same concept.
Yeah, in this article, maybe it's just from the Lansing State Journal. They didn't get technical on it, but it didn't talk about what the attack was or where it's going from. They claim that no customer data was lost. Or stolen.
No, because it's all encrypted now.
I thought that from the article that I saw, I thought an employee had clicked on something in an email, and that's what precipitated. That was the vector in, as I recall, unless I'm confusing it with another cyber attack.
Maybe I should go and give my talk at their for them. You know, that one of them was don't click on things in your email.
Yeah.
Oh, and
tell them all the time, though.
I see those things come through, and it's... Although I have fired up a virtual machine just to see what happens.
The latest one is called Locky, and its latest incantation uses a really interesting Java dropper that's really, really good at getting by antivirus software. Mm-hmm. Our phone started ringing a lot for support on Tuesday and carried into Thursday for lots and lots of people that seem to have bypassed the antiviruses. Mm. No problem. We encrypted their hard drives. The good news is the people we have recommended use OpenDNS seem to be saved from it. It only dropped the file that says your files are encrypted, but did not encrypt the files. The reason for that is OpenDNS has been actively watching for this, and they block all of the sites that hold on to the encryption keys. And if the software is smart enough, it won't encrypt your hard drive unless it can verify that the attackers have got a copy of the encryption key, because that way they can get the money to give you back the encryption key.
Right.
If they can't drop off the encryption keys, it doesn't encrypt. It just installs.
Yeah, and what DNS, or the OpenDNS is doing, it's they're not blocking the traffic.
No.
It's they're not giving the, you know, the DNS resolution from the name to IP.
Right.
So if it can't say, go to this name, it's going, you know, to a black hole, then it's never going to get to the attackers.
Yep. So it actually saves a lot of people just by doing that.
Right. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people actually use it for content filtering other than
yep.
than viruses, but for, you know, for children.
Their parent company called Umbrella does that.
Yeah.
They sell it as really a service. Nice. They have a free version for home, and then you can get the paid version.
Yeah. You know, what's neat with the free version is you could still set up custom redirects.
Yes.
So whenever somebody clicks on a bad site or bad link or something, it actually pops up, and you can put your own logo in there and stuff and saying, hey, don't go here. So if your kid clicks on it and it pops up with your picture yelling at them, you know, that'd be, they'd be like, oh no, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, that's a good way to remind them.
Yeah. And then a few other ones I found, articles is, Google patches, high security flaws in Chrome 50. So I didn't know that Chrome got up to version number 50 already, but.
I wasn't aware of that either, but I'll take your word for it, Tony.
Yeah. Anyway, there's 9 different, vulnerabilities that they, patched, and they paid out over $14,000 in bug bounties, with the highest being a $3,000. For the high security flaw, mm-hmm. and there was multiple mediums that they paid out at $1,000 each. The link will be in the show notes about the specs. It goes through and the exact CVEs and out of bounds, mm-hmm. right blank, and use after free bug, and all sorts of stuff. So it's really interesting if you're into that.
Okay.
And then also, Firefox came out with a new version that's
47?
Yeah.
It's only 3 behind.
Oh, no, 46.
Oh, 46.
Releases, okay. 47 is in public beta right now.
Okay.
But Mozilla Patch is 46. That's what it is. 10 vulnerabilities in 46.
Okay.
So yeah.
Kind of on a related note to that, so Google went around and set the date for 2016 that they're going to be deprecating everyone who uses SHA-1 in the websites for security, because there's a potential for cracking it. But Google is telling people to do one thing but doing another internally. When you add the repositories for Google, the newest 16 series of Ubuntu's, they look for SHA-1 and say, no, that's not a good enough security. So they follow Google's protocol. Google has no date as to when they will update to SHA-2 because all the Google repositories in Linux are all SHA-1.
Oh,
so you
geez.
Get an error every time you do an apt-get update that some of your repositories fail, and there's not a workaround. You simply have to, it will download them. You can force it to download all the updates from there, but you get a security warning every time that Google server. So the irony of Google telling everyone to do it, the date has come, it is built into Ubuntu, and now they mm-hmm. themselves have no predicted date. And the Google Chrome team is actually very vocal about it, going, we don't control the server certificates. This is at way above us, because this goes across all of the Google downloads for everything are only using these SHA-1 certificates. So, yeah. It's all across Google they're only using these, even though Google's actually put it into Chrome that they're going to start giving security warnings on websites that are old and still use that. But they themselves use it. Oh, by the way, all Google sites are immune and automatically blocked inside of there for that. You don't get security warning on Google sites that are using it. Yeah, I don't understand. Like, why would you roll it out and not do it yourself?
Right. But, that's pretty bad.
And then put an exception in your code to ignore it.
Definitely. All right. Okay. Well.
All right.
Must be time for, or I'm sorry, Tony, are you done?
I am done.
All right. I knew that. All right. Well, we're going to move on to the Linux convention scene.
Yeah.
And this is for the month of May 2016. And we'll start off with May 11th through the 13th in Vancouver, British Columbia. That's lovely, Vancouver, British Columbia. I've heard it's beautiful out there. I've never been. We're going to have ApacheCon North America. This convention will bring together the open source community to learn about and collaborate on the technologies, projects driving the future of open source web technologies and cloud computing. Now, in conjunction with that convention, actually, it's not in conjunction exactly. I think it's going to front end it. Is the the Apache Big Data North America, because Hadoop, which is the big data technology, is managed by the Apache Foundation. So that's going to be just before the ApacheCon itself gets started. So we've got that, and then we have. Let's see here, at about the same time, but in a different city. And I, for some reason, I thought I had the date in here. DrupalCon. Tony, you'd be interested in this.
Yeah.
It's in New Orleans.
Hey.
And can you bring it up for me?
Nah.
DrupalCon 2016. And while I talk about it, you can then, you know, we can share the date. For some reason, my notes here don't have it, which is kind of unusual. But anyway.
May 9th to the 13th.
There you go. I knew it was about the same
next
time.
Next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is one of the largest open source communities in the world, the Drupal community, that is. And so they're going to come together for this big event. So bring your questions and challenges. You're tired. You're people yearning to be free. Oh, wait, that's the wrong, the wrong statute. But anyway, at DrupalCon, you're going to learn to make, think about, and do things differently in Drupal. So they've got quite a few, session tracks. They'll have things like UX, DevOps, project management, and then PHP, which, of course, kind of caught my eye because I like PHP. So, and those are the May conventions that I was aware of. So if you've got any others, speak now or hold it for next month.
You know, I think the Kansas Linux Fest is coming up, but I can't remember the date.
You know, I did a search, didn't see it, but it might be June.
Well, let's see. KansasLinuxFest.org says...
May 21st to the 22nd.
Oh, there you
21st,
go.
Yeah.
So that's
Thank
in May
you.
As well.
Thank you very
yeah,
much.
It's at Wichita State University.
Mm-hmm.
The event is free, but we ask you to please register.
I like the logo. Guys, look that up. That looks cool.
Yeah.
I've been holding a
little piece of wheat. Piece
yeah.
of wheat,
yeah.
Top of wheat.
I've not been to cool. Kansas. I've heard that's all that's there. A penguin holding a lot of wheat.
Yeah, it's pretty flat.
But they are gonna have a lot of Linux stuff going on there, I think. A lot of sessions and a lot of Linux goodness. So that's Kansas Linux Fest, May 21st and 22nd. So
all right.
Tony, thanks for filling that one in.
Well, Tom got it actually before
actually,
I did.
Tom did. All right. Well, thanks you guys for helping out.
It was a race who has the faster laptop. We actually have the same one. He just has the i5. I have the i7 version. They're the same model.
Okay.
Well, I'm gonna claim a handicap on this one because I'm running the Google Hangouts right now. So.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
All right. So anyway, so that's the Linux convention scene for May 2016.
All right.
So we're on to...
We're on to the music this week.
Right.
And I don't know what we're going to play. You know, in the past, I've always found somebody here that's been like in the, that's either a music track or something that we've been able to talk to. And this year, wasn't as big or wasn't as popular or something. And I didn't find anybody.
So you're saying there's no music? Or
it will be random music. How about that?
Hey, what about the 8-bit chip guys?
There was some retro gaming going on this table yesterday.
Okay.
So
all right.
That's fitting.
We can channel it then.
We can channel
all
the
8-bit
joy.
So when you listen to the final version of the show, you're going to hear some really cool music. But for now, we'll just sit around and look at each other while Tony finds something.
Oh, it says royalty-free 8-bit retro soundtrack.
Yeah, royalty-free music. There we go. We have our music.
Here's my volume button. It's right there. Yep, so we've come to the end of the show. You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 191.
PenguinCon.
Yeah, and this is Tony Bemis.
Mary,
That's right.
2016 Bing event. Yeah. Okay. In case you're wondering. Okay. Sorry.
That's all right.
And this is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night. Interactive live show. Visit LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/ Tech Show. And Flying Rich is so hot.